From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We are all about the arts today. Some stunning photographs from a German artist on display for the first time in Atlanta. Plus, we'll catch up on what movies are filming here and a special performance from the young women of the band St. Beauty.
Just communication, and one thing that helps a lot is we have the same sense of humor. We'll laugh at something that somebody else will think is so weird and stupid, but we'll both just be cracking up at it.
That's coming up. First, though, we talked about Clarence Thomas's legacy yesterday. It's been 25 years since his controversial confirmation hearings, and Georgia State law professor Tanya Washington talked about his legacy and what he'll be remembered for.
He attempted to assimilate, and he also worked really hard not to fit the stereotype. But in doing that, you don't give yourself permission to be yourself. We don't have to be perfect as Black people or Black jurists to be equal.
Here are your thoughts. Rabbit tweets, Clarence Thomas was in keeping with his time, but neglected to shift positions when it failed. Assimilation cannot bring equity. Reverend Joel Tolbert tweets, how can Clarence Thomas claim the system attacked him for his color, then advocate for jurisprudence that is colorblind? And Cass Muddy tweets, from your guests, I understand we'll remember Justice Clarence Thomas as present and with some level of activity. We talked yesterday about sexual assaults in high schools as well. Title IX coordinators are supposed to help and support student victims. But an investigation by Slate magazine found many Title IX coordinators at the high school level don't actually understand their responsibilities, if they exist. Slate used a Georgia school, Peachtree Ridge High School in Suwanee, as a case study. And Nora Kaplan-Bricker of Slate says, at that school, a female student accused a male student of sexual assault.
The school deemed the male student, quote unquote, more credible than the female student. Because that was their finding, they decided that this was consensual and therefore it was in violation of the rules and therefore both students must be punished. That in and of itself is a violation of what the federal government and the Department of Education have been telling schools for years now, which is that if a student comes forward and says, my civil rights have been violated, then in that case, the school can't take retributive action against that student.
We reached out to Gwinnett County Public Schools for a response. Sloan Roach is the school's executive director of communication and media relations. She says, quote, the school district strongly disputes the allegations contained in the Office of Civil Rights complaint, as this situation involves a pending OCR complaint and associated investigations, as well as threats of litigation. The district is unable to comment or discuss specific details. That said, Gwinnett County Public Schools takes all complaints of sexual assault very seriously, conducting thorough and prompt investigations of such reports. It's always good to get your opinions on things like this. You can always call us and leave a message at 404-500-9457. You can tweet us at OST Talk or post on Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. On any given day, there's probably a film or TV crew working somewhere in our state. But what are they working on? Let's go on set in Georgia.
Here we go. Movie!
In Georgia!
Make films.
Movies?
Let's go to the movies.
Let's go see the stars.
Joining me yet again, Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporter Jennifer Brett. She also writes for the AJC's Atlanta Buzz blog. Welcome back.
Good morning.
So Halloween is a few weeks away, and we get a seasonal movie from Tyler Perry. It's called Boo, a Madea Halloween.
To see you.
I'm glad you're here to help me with her because there's a party around the corner and I want to be sure she doesn't try to sneak out.
This is going to be so wild.
These children today, you got to drop the hammer on them.
What's the worst that can happen to her? Turn to prostitution, drugs? Hell, how you think I met your mama?
The film opens on October 21st. What's the buzz about this?
You know, what I'm really so excited about regarding this movie is it's the first project that Tyler Perry filmed at the Fort McPherson property, now acquired. So I got a chance to interview him just the other day ahead of the release. And he talked about, you know, repurposing that historic property. It looks really great on camera. So it's really going to be interesting for longtime residents of Atlanta to see Fort McPherson in a new and really innovative new use. Of course, Madea's back in action, taking names, dropping the hammer, as your clip there suggested. It's a spooky horror movie, but it's mostly funny.
Yeah, and he also spoke at a recent press event about how he's been inspired by young actors in Atlanta.
That's why I did it, man. At this point, it would be easier for me not to do it, to relax and
lay around and slow down a little bit, but looking at all the faces that are coming through the doors, how excited they are, it's really life-changing.
What did he say about being able to film here and the, I guess, the environment for movie making in
Georgia? Well, he was just such a pioneer in the Atlanta filming industry. He was, really on the forefront, way before all these other projects have been lured here since the 2008 legislation that enacted these, film-friendly tax policies. So he has really been able to grow his, enormous empire, not only with the Madea movies, but other movies, and of course, all these different TV projects. Too Close to Home is one that's kind of timely right now. It's a political series set in D.C. I asked him if the current political season is informing his his creative process. He says he's, been kind of interested in Donald Trump as a business person, as a personality. Make no mistake, he does not want him running the country. His support is fully behind Hillary Clinton. And if you checked out that funny clip that we posted on AJC.com the other day, Madea took on Donald Trump, so to speak, in character. So check that out.
Okay, so Melissa McCarthy is back. She has filmed here before. She's just came out of her role in Ghostbusters. What's her next big film?
Yeah, in the past, she's done The Boss here and the Identity Thief. Now she's filming Life of the Party with her husband and director Ben Falcone. It's been sort of likened to a back to school from back in the day. She's been filming at a number of area campuses, including Agnes Scott and Clayton State University. Atlanta is blessed with many different campuses, so it's a great place to film a movie that involves a school. She has really jumped into this role with both feet. I saw a picture of her on set the other day. There was a soccer scene, and she was suited up in the goal, pads on. Ready for action. So this one looks like she's having a lot of fun.
She's a physical actress. Yeah. Well, let's move on to some more action. Marvel Studios also back. They seem to love Georgia.
Yeah, Marvel is putting down some roots, right?
Yeah, right. Several big films set to come out, including the very highly anticipated sequel to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I'll have to agree with the walking thesaurus on that one.
Do not ever call me a thesaurus.
It's just a metaphor, dude.
His people are completely literal. Metaphors are gonna go over his head.
Nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too fast. I would catch it.
That's a clip from the first one.
Yeah.
But this new one is set to come out in May. I am really looking forward to this. Is this the only Marvel movie that was filmed here or is filming here?
Oh, my goodness. No, Marvel has really put down some roots here. Ant-Man and Captain America, Civil War have been filmed here and have been released. Up next is the Avengers Infinity War. I've already started seeing some casting calls for this one. They're going to put down some roots here. They're going to be here for quite a while.
What does that mean, put down some roots?
They are going to be here for months and months. So I would not be surprised if you run into, Chris Evans at Bones again, like he was spotted. I'm sorry, Chops, where he was spotted earlier. Scarlett Johansson showed up at STK Steakhouse. Wouldn't be surprised if you see some of the Avenger folk around town. Black Panther, starring Chadwick Boseman in the title role, is coming up next. And then Ant-Man and the Wasp, reprising Paul Rudd's little bitty superhero character, is coming next year as well. So great to see Marvel enjoying Atlanta so well.
Edward Austin Hall tweeted to us, "I've stumbled upon sets for Spider-Man Homecoming, but no actual shoots, so I'm eager for Marvel Studios' take on Peter Parker." If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Jennifer Brett of the AJC. We're talking about what is filming in Georgia. So we have another film that's going to bring together a lot of really recognizable names, and it's a project called Logan Lucky. It's centered around a NASCAR event, though. So they're filming, I presume, at Atlanta Motor Speedway?
Yeah, great place for a NASCAR movie to film right here at Hampton Roads. Also going to be filming, I understand, up in Charlotte, of course, home of NASCAR. So this is an ensemble project bringing together stars including Adam Driver, Channing Tatum, Seth MacFarlane, Daniel Craig, Katherine Heigl, Hilary Swank. Good Lord, everybody is in this movie. This probably explains why Adam Driver and Chatham Tatum were spotted backstage at Music Midtown back in the day. They were hanging out with the Killers backstage before their set, so it looks like they're having fun.
Adam Driver, many people know from either the HBO show Girls or from starring in Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah. So the next movie that you wanted to talk about is set around also a sports event, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. This is about a soldier's return to American society after taking a tour in Iraq.
It's sort of weird being honored for the worst day of your life.
You know things most of the rest of us will never know. That's got to weigh heavy on a young man's shoulders.
Well, the thing is that a film's going to be serious when they've gotten a children's choir to sing a pop tune.
Yeah, man, they're not even playing around there.
That's how you know they're deep.
Yeah.
What do we hear about this one?
Directed by the great Ang Lee. This is based on the novel by the same name, about returning war heroes who are sort of pressed into service once again to rally public support for the military effort. And as the clip indicated, it's a little bit more complex than it appears on the surface. Kristen Stewart's in this movie. Joe Alwyn is Billy Lynn. Also stars Vin Diesel. And I want to shout out Laura Wheel, who plays one of Billy's sisters. She's a local actress. Her day job is she's an attorney. And then just for fun, she's an actress. And so she nabbed a role in Sully not too long ago, which filmed here. That was the movie with Tom Hanks as the heroic pilot. She's also going to appear in Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. So love to see local talent getting
maybe she'll have a niche as a relative of heroic men.
You know what Laura Wheel has that almost nobody in Hollywood has? A genuine Southern accent. Because, you know, sometimes when you hear Hollywood try to do a Southern accent, it just makes your ears about bleed. She's got the real thing.
I'm not the best judge on that. But let's talk about a popular TV series that's just heading to Georgia for its second season, Underground, which was the story of some plantation slaves and their plans to escape.
I've been a slave all my life. 25 years. 300 months. I'm done waiting. It's time to act, but I can't do it alone.
As long as we're together, we can do anything.
I don't know how long can this show sustain. Eventually, they escape, right?
Well, you know, we know how history turns out, so happily that's the ending here. But of course, there were lots of folks involved in this movement. This Underground was it's set in Georgia. The first season was filmed in Louisiana, and then Louisiana started dithering around with its tax credits. Not so in Georgia; they came on down to take advantage of our tax policies here. They've been filming down the Savannah area, pushed pause for a couple of days to get out of the way of Hurricane Matthew, and I understand they're cranking back up this week. So really looking forward to seeing more from this really popular WGN series.
Okay, so actress and director Kim Fields has a new faith-based indie film. It's called A Question of Faith, and you actually spoke with Fields about this particular movie.
It's a wonderful, moving drama about three families and a tragedy that hits the families in different ways, and the journey that they are thrust upon to deal with a question of their faith and get into the other side, peace, forgiveness, or see all of the above.
I don't think I've seen Kim Fields in anything since Facts of Life, and she was Tootie. So it's been a very long time. What made you interested in this particular film?
Oh, well, they filmed it right around the corner from my house, which was really nice of them to do. And so I was able to go visit with her. She's actually produced a number of projects between Facts of Life and the current. And then she was on The Real Housewives of Atlanta for like a hot minute and decided that wasn't maybe the greatest fit for her. Anyway, moving on. She's in this indie film, as you noted, and it's coming out next year. She plays a preacher's wife, and she's really interested in really flexing a lot of creative muscles. So I would not be surprised if we see more from her behind and in front of the camera.
We have like 30 seconds left. Can you give us whatever the current buzz is on Walking Dead?
Chandler Riggs is not dead in real life. The internet had this, rumor going around that he had passed away, and he weighed in on Twitter and said, "Oh no, still here. Looking forward to the next season, October 23rd coming up, and I am still alive."
That is Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporter, also still alive, Jennifer Brett. She's the AJC's Atlanta Buzz blog author. Thanks so much, as always.
See you next time.
Just ahead, Atlanta musical duo St. Beauty visits the GBB Performance Studio. First, though, photographer Thomas Struth joins us to talk about the new exhibit at the High Museum. This is On Second Thought. Georgia and the entire nation lost a courageous fighter this week.
Just because I got a fatal disease doesn't mean any doctor can put any amount of time on my life. You know, everybody's gonna die one day. So I try to live life one day at a time.
Darius Weems of Athens died Sunday. Darius was a tireless activist, raising national awareness of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It's a rare genetic disorder that weakens muscle tissue, causing paralysis and ultimately death. Dr. Catherine Wagner has studied the disease for years.
Most of the focus in Duchenne has been on the children, which is incredibly important. But sometimes it feels it's a community that once the boys have lost the ability to walk, that we've forgotten about them.
But Darius Weems refused to be forgotten. At the age of 15, he starred in a documentary called Darius Goes West. In the film, he and his friends travel from Georgia to L.A., hoping to convince MTV to pimp his ride, in this case, his wheelchair. Here's Logan Smalley, the director of the film.
He was pretty nervous about his wheelchair. Naturally, I think it's kind of like putting on a pair of glasses times 100 for the first time. You suddenly look a lot different. And it was kind of my job to make him feel better about it, feel cool about it.
Darius lost his brother to Duchenne in 1991, but he spent nearly a decade traveling to schools to talk about his disorder and raising money for further research.
I still got screened. I think a breakthrough would happen. Like, I'd be fighting. I just like fighting.
Just a few years ago, ABC News profiled Darius ahead of his 23rd birthday.
What do you hope people say about you when you're gone, Darius?
I would definitely want people to see me as a strong person, no matter what I've been through, all the obstacles. I want people to see me as a fighter and said I live my life to the fullest, no matter what.
Most people who have the disorder die by age 25. Darius Weems was 27 when he passed away in Athens on Sunday. Just last month, the FDA approved the first drug designed to treat patients with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Photographer Thomas Struth captures larger-than-life images of places people don't normally visit, places like space stations and physics laboratories. His art often focuses on technology and man-made landscapes, and his images encourage viewers to see the world perhaps differently, perhaps deconstructed. Atlanta's High Museum of Art opens a new exhibit of his works this weekend. It's called Thomas Struth, Nature and Politics, and that's the first time this exhibit will be shown in the U.S. Thomas Struth is in town for the opening, and he joins me now. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Also with us is Gregory Harris. He's the High Museum's Assistant Curator of Photography. Good morning, Gregory.
Good morning.
Thomas, this is called Nature and Politics, and yet many of the photographs focus not on nature like when you walk out into the forest at all. Tell me where the title of the exhibit derives from.
Yeah, the title of the exhibition came up, I mean, the title of that body of work came up as a working title predominantly in the beginning, because I thought I need something when I talk to my assistants, you know, about that body of work, that we know what it's about. And nature and politics, from the beginning, it was clear that this is about the dominance of technology in our thinking and our kind of your projected hopes into the future as a level of progress. But I wanted to point that the part of politics that's involved in science and technology. And so nature and politics was a kind of almost like joking title first, because I felt like in every development of technology that cannot happen without nature, particles, bacteria or whatever, but also in every science and technology activity, there's politics implemented, because there's intentions in it. Yeah, there's dimensions of consequences that will come up that often are not thought about in the beginning. So there's always nature and politics in all science and technology activities we do.
And there's a photo of the aquarium here in Atlanta, and as a number of your photographs do, it includes the viewers. Which we'll talk about in just a second, but almost the top quarter of it is obliterated by this bright white light. And it occurs to me, especially related to what you're talking about in terms of the title, that even though what we're looking at in that photograph looks natural, it's man-made. It's technology that's created that reef inside the aquarium. So why, when you're constructing these photos, are you looking for pure beauty? Do the photos have to have a narrative or a commentary?
Well, I think, For me, I think when you're an artist or a musician or a writer, foremost it begins with the question of reason. Do you have what's my reason to write a book or to compose a piece of music or to make a picture or a photograph or a painting? So you need to become clear of the reason why you become active. And I think beauty, or like to seduce people to, you want to stay, you stand in front of a picture and look at it, it needs a certain amount of beauty, you know, like a seductiveness. So that can be perfection, that can be your great composition, but definitely needs, my point of view, it needs a perfection in terms of every detail that's in the picture has to be in the picture, and everything that's in front of you of what I want to photograph, that's maybe not necessary to develop the narrative of what I want to talk about. It should be excluded. So the framing, the cropping, and all the observing all the details. You know, for example, in that photograph you were talking about, you know, how the children behave and what they're doing. When I have several negatives, it has to be edited, and it has to be, you digest it, it has to be thought through, and it must be there.
So Gregory, every exhibit creates its own challenges. What were the challenges of this one, other than size, right? Many of these photos are huge.
Right, yeah. Many of the photographs are several feet wide, and they're enormous photographs, which is an amazing experience to have in the museum. In terms of challenges, I mean, the work deals with a lot of very big, very complex ideas. So these ideas about creativity and human ingenuity and how human ingenuity shapes the physical world that we live in. And so trying to find a way to communicate that to a viewer was a big challenge, because the photographs don't immediately reveal the meaning.
Yeah, they need time.
You need time to digest them. You need a little bit of context in some cases. So the way that we tried to work through those problems was we worked very closely with Thomas and how the photographs were arranged, which walls they went on, which galleries, all the pictures were together, how they had a conversation with each other. The images, when you place one next to another, they inflect different meanings one way or the other. So we worked very closely to arrange the show. And then we also wrote text to go along with about half of the photographs that would provide context about what the subject matter of the photograph is. So many of the photographs are of sites of advanced technology and innovation. And many people don't know what a tokamak or a stellarator is. They're nuclear fusion experiments, but even that doesn't necessarily tell you so much about what you're looking at. So it's just to provide some kind of context, a point of entry for viewers.
Although you don't need it, they're still beautiful.
Exactly, you don't.
It just adds something extra. And I wanted to talk about the photos that you take that include the viewers, because there's so many of them. And in fact, there's that whole series where you don't even see what they're looking at, right? You've turned the camera the other way, and we're only seeing people gazing up at some piece of art. What is it about the viewer experience that draws you, the human beings looking at a piece of art?
Well, that the two ingredients that I find very important to make art, you want that the experiences you're talking about are something that you know about yourself, so that you're private, the experiences that you in, you know, through joy and
right, your own personal experiences,
yeah,
that you bring.
Your personal experiences, but also is something that you think that's a general experience that many people might have, and that you can share with the public, with other people. So, and your one experience is like, what do you do with art? You know, what do you, can you, like, what do you get from it? How can you read it? What do you do with the ambiguity of your own thoughts about it? What do you do with a lack of information, or you know, how do you deal with interpretation of something you're looking at? And I was that interested me for a long time, and still fascinates me. Yes, you know, so when people come, you know, as we were talking about before, you come to my exhibition. I have my particular set of reasons why I did this, but it's, you know, and for me, I cannot even look at my own pictures as if I wouldn't know them. So
right.
So and I cannot I can try to steer people into understanding what I was talking about or what I'm talking about with the pictures, but it's many things will happen to you that I have no control about. Yeah, so
and that doesn't bother you? That
no, of course not. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the fun. People tell me things about my pictures that I haven't seen yet, or that it's very enriching, or it can be very enriching. So this whole subject matter of the museum visit, in particular, also because it's such an open field, it's such a kind of free. It's a freedom to go into the museum and look at some work that somebody did for their own private reasons. It's not so determined, and the borders are sort of unclear, and it's all about negotiation of thought and negotiation and encounter between people, and it's a very interesting field that has a lot of freedom, and I think that's something I enjoy a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of enlightening to hear you talking about how much you enjoy that freedom, because people have described your photos as have near clinical objectivity. I think I read one person describing it, and I wonder how you handle that in the hanging of the photographs. Some of these photos, like I said, they almost look deconstructed, as though this is a real nuclear reactor, and yet it almost looks like a stage that Kubrick created, right? Because it's so precise. How do you handle that?
Well, all the photographs are composed very rationally and organized, and they seem almost clinically objective in some ways. And yet there are little details that Thomas includes that allude to humanity in one way, and that kind of allows a person to maybe place themselves in that photograph and can relate to that. There's a photograph toward the beginning of the exhibition, which is of a nuclear fusion experiment, and it's just a mess of wires and foil and metal. And then there's a blue glove that's just resting in the corner, and there's a hand, like the presence of the human hand is literally in that photograph, and so that otherwise alienating surface gets broken down and allows you a little point of entry into the photograph.
Now, you created a very now famous portrait of the Queen and her husband. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading at the time that you were really surprised that they would have asked you to do that. Why?
Well, because I'm not... usually I'm sort of an anti-celebrity culture person, and I'm not... I started to do family portraits and portraits of couples in the mid-80s, because I'm interested in family dynamic, and I'm interested in questions how do people become who they are, and the fact that one gift you get, like when you get born, you get three gifts: the time in which you were born, and the location, and to who you were born, and that's something that's inevitable, and that's a gift that we all share, and what you do with it or what comes out of it for your life, it depends on many, many things. So when I'm interested in this, your fate of that construction. So, but I've never been interested in photographing famous people, so I was, when I got the call from the National Portrait Gallery in London, I thought this is insane. Why should I, like, how, you what? So they, but I understood that they were interested because I have a very kind of highly pitched your sensitivity to psychological science, conditions.
The photos are almost, there's a level of perfection.
So I said to them, well, I think you have to think about it for 3 days before I give you an answer, because I thought, okay,
told the Queen that you had to
think about it. No, not the Queen, but the... But the curator at the National Portrait Gallery, of course, they asked me first before they addressed the Queen, and I thought... when I thought about it, I thought, okay, if it succeeds, then I will always have to talk about it, even though the picture doesn't matter so much to me, because it's like an exotic. It was a very fun and challenging and intense work to do, but it has a very exotic place in my whole oeuvre. It's not so. it doesn't matter so much to me. Even though it was a fun experience, it was a, you know, was a big challenge. I've prepared for a very, very long time to make that picture. Like reading
You read a biography.
I read a biography. I went with two assistants to that place and modeled the composition and tried to find out what to do.
The dress she would wear.
Yeah, exactly. I demanded to choose the dress because I thought I cannot risk if she comes in an orange, ugly dress or something that doesn't match the colors of the space or so, or like a yellow hat or something like that. So I, yeah, that all worked out very, very well. And we negotiated about the time. I wanted 1 hour. She wanted to give me 20 minutes, and we ended up going to 45 minutes, but it took only 30 minutes, and so I gave them like 15 minutes, and then I showed them a picture of our new puppy dog because I thought it would be
she
fun.
She likes her dogs, her corgis.
And so we had these pictures, yes, standing together laughing about the picture of our puppy dogs.
Yeah, this is Thomas Struth. His an exhibit of his work opens at the High Museum of Art on Sunday. It runs until January. You can see some of the photographs at our website, gpbnews.org. They're gorgeous. I recommend it. This is On Second Thought. The Afropunk Festival draws thousands to Brooklyn every summer. It's a celebration of innovation both in music and in fashion. You've probably seen some photographs online, perhaps colorful, bright, vivid colors, chic fabrics. The Afropunk Festival has expanded, though, to all kinds of other international cities, and one of them is Atlanta. This weekend, the festival makes its debut here. Afropunk's Carnival of Consciousness begins Friday, and my guests are part of that lineup. Alex Bell and Isis Valentino make up the Atlanta-based duo Saint Beauty. Alex is the lead vocalist. Isis sings and plays the guitar and bass in the Orange Studio for a special performance. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
People talk about certain bands that are great in a festival. Like they point to, you know, say Queen's iconic performance and say these are people who knew how to own a stage in front of thousands. But what is it? What makes that difference?
Having a band behind us helps a lot. It really gives us that drive and pumps us up to, you know, really own the stage.
Do you have to change, do anything to getting your energy up? Do you have to go run a mile or something to try to get your energy ready to perform to a stadium?
I mean, we rehearse in front of a big mirror, too, as
well. Wow, really?
Yeah, so that helps a lot for us to see ourselves when we're performing and, you know, feel comfortable with the movements that we do and, you know.
Yeah, with the band, it gives us a lot more freedom. So, like, I don't have to play as much or... You know, I can just kind of like come in when I want to, or just like we just have more freedom when there's a band. And obviously when there's more people, the energy that comes with it, like that's just a different, it's just a different feel. Right. So doing an acoustic set is great. It gives people more of an intimate moment with us. But I love like performing in front of like the crowds because it's a lot of fun. And the energy, like I said, is like amazing.
Yeah. Do you feel like you guys are going to have to continue liking each other in order to keep the band going?
Yeah, I mean, we liked each other since the beginning.
But there have been some pretty famous fights between band, and especially when you start touring, that's a lot of time with the same person, right? I don't even know if I would like my own son with that amount of time you spend in close quarters with someone. That's difficult. I mean, so do you ever wonder about how to keep that relationship healthy?
Just communication. And one thing that helps a lot is we have the same sense of humor. We'll laugh at something that somebody else will think is so weird and stupid, but we'll both just be cracking up at it. So, I mean, that's one thing that like really keeps the relationship going is our sense of humor. And
we give just each other
our communication.
Space.
Yeah, we give each other space.
We treat each other how we want to be treated pretty much. We're kind of not the same people, but like... We have
similar mindsets of relationships.
Yeah, like, so we understand, like, okay, she may feel this way right now. Let me, like, chill out. Let me back up. Right. And, like, we've never really had, like, a huge argument. Like, actually, we've been working together for 5 years, and we haven't had, like, a
never a had, like, big, a big blowout or anything.
Yeah.
You paid a visit to the GPB Performance Studio and played some songs for us. Let's listen to one of them now. This is called With You.
I don't care. I go where you're not there. 'Cause I don't hear the love in your soul.
time. If you could leave your pride aside, I would be there. Kiss all these tears I cried, they weren't worth it. And for so long I believed all those lies. You lied. And now I'm reassuring my mind. I'm fine with you. I was crying and lying, denying. I'm glad that you're gone. And now I'm laughing and clapping and singing. I'm glad that we're done. With you I was crying and lying, denying. I'm glad that you're gone. And now I'm laughing and clapping and singing. I'm glad that we're done. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're done.
That is Saint Beauty from their performance in our GPB performance studio. The song is called With You. So you guys were both playing. You guys were both musicians before you met. How do you think your sound changed? Did it change you as all the pairing of the two of you together? Did that change your individual musicianship?
It just worked out for us.
Yeah. I mean, alone, individually, we're strong, but together, we're much more stronger.
Yeah, we met at, we used to work at a vintage store in College Park.
Yeah.
And they used to have shows, like, in a basement. And so Alex was like, hey, do you know anybody who could play guitar? Like, I have a song I want to perform. I was like, hey, you know, I could try. You know, I was just like learning chords. And we got together and she would like just like, oh, I have this song idea. And I was like, make chords for it. And it kind of made like Saint Beauty sound.
From then on, we just started to come together more and write together and collaborate on things. And we just decided to become Saint Beauty.
You guys have started to take off. I always find it funny when they say this sudden meteoric rise, but I mean, you guys have been playing together for years. You guys, mm-hmm. Nobody can see your side eye over the radio, Isis. Just so you know. I just always find it ironic when people say things like that. They burst onto the scene when you guys have been playing together for years, but I wonder what this feels like for you when you finally do start to get traction. What's that experience like?
I'm just thankful. You know, I didn't expect anything when we took that leap of performing together for the first time. It wasn't it. There weren't any expectations. We were just doing it because we loved doing it. We loved doing music. So to have these opportunities is a blessing.
Let's hear another song from your set from the GPB Performance Studio. This is called Going Nowhere.
Hands in the air. Like I don't care, running free, just being me. Going nowhere. We're lying down, side by side. Don't make a sound, enjoy the ride. Oh,
We ain't going nowhere. I feel something different every moment that I'm with you. Like summer in November, everything you do is brilliant. You're mine. We ain't going nowhere. Nowhere.
The name of that song is Going Nowhere. The group is St. Beauty, and they're my guest today. And earlier, they performed for us in the GPB Performance Studio.
So you were talking about, one of you mentioned the St. Beauty sound. What is that sound? What do you think of as the St. Beauty sound?
I don't feel like you can put a label on art. I mean, our music, I feel like our music is it's art. And I remember this one guy came up to us after a show, and he said, our music sounds like floating through outer space underwater. And I was like, wow, that's exactly what I feel like our music sounds like. So that's how I'm going to tell people what our music sounds like from now on. It's just floating through outer space underwater.
Trying to think about, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad description. It's not a bad description. So when you first started, have your goals changed from those first moments when you said, hey, let's try this out and see where it goes, and what those goals were? Have they changed now, 5 years later?
They're pretty much the same, but there's a different perspective on things now because of how many people are looking at us. Not to say like the whole world is looking right now, but I remember we did like a performance in Atlanta, like at a fashion show like a while ago. And there was a girl, like she came up to us and like she was like crying and she was like, oh my God, like you don't understand how great it is to see you guys perform, because at my school, people like me, like they're so afraid to be themselves. And like to see you guys like just free and just do it, you know, just being who you are. Like that, I feel so much better about myself. And it was like, what? Like, how? I never thought, you know what I mean, that anything like that would come from playing guitar and singing songs. And that made me feel like a better human being. And I just want to like make sure I stay feeling that way, like I'm helping people. And that's pretty much like how I've been. That's kind of the space I've been in now, just like wanting to like give more and making sure that as many people are inspired like she was. That's really, I feel like that's both of our goals, but that really hits home for me.
Who fulfilled that role for you growing up?
I love like Stevie Wonder. He definitely hit like a spot for me, like just perspective on life, love, just the beauty of things. Like the fact that he can't like, so-called see beauty, but he can like communicate it so well, like with music.
Isn't she lovely? And
yeah, it's like so beautiful. Like it's like, wow, like you're amazing. And it makes you want to like really take your craft seriously. And he's just an amazing human being. It's just
Alex,
love.
Who fulfilled that for you?
Well, I listened to so many people growing up and I was inspired by so many people, but one person that really inspires me now, Nina Simone, because she was so real with her artistry. Like she was a full-blown artist because she wrote about everything that she felt, and she wasn't afraid to show who she was. She wasn't afraid to show who she was through music, through absolutely everything. And that's something that I'm really inspired by, is just being completely real with myself and real with everyone else. So that's one person that really inspires me.
Before we go, can I ask you a little bit about the music business? Because there has been so much discussion from really top level artists like Jay-Z about the fact that the current music business is unfair to musicians and that it's difficult for people to break through. And I wonder if you have concerns about that, or if you have strategized on how to maintain success and maintain your musical soul.
Well, we recently came to some realizations and we really feel like we are in control. That's something that we always have to remember, is that we are in control of our destiny. No one else is. And, you know, that's just the one thing that we always have to keep in our minds when we're working, when we feel like, when we're discouraged or anything. We just have to remember that we are in control of our destiny.
Alex Bell and Isis Valentino are Saint Beauty. You can catch them perform this Friday at the Afropunk Carnival of Consciousness in Atlanta. That's our show for today, but as always, we'd love to hear from you, especially when it comes to music in Georgia. And who is your favorite act from the Peach State? We want to know, and we'll take a listen to some music. You can call us at 404-500-9457. You can also tweet us. You know how to find us. We're on Facebook as well. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Once more, here's Saint Beauty with the song Americlones.
1, 2, 3. I was told we are controlled by society. I guess I'm different cause they can't get a hold of me. They try to break me down, but one day soon they will see that I got too much confidence and security. Knock me down, I'm getting up. I don't care, show no love, but I will always show love. With this gift given from above, make me feel like I'm alone. Try to get inside my dome, regardless of the salt you throw. I've never been a Americlone. I've never been a Americlone. I've never been a. Time has passed and I just laugh cause my life is great. But you make me dwell on the mistakes I have made. But I just move on with the biggest smile on my face. Cause all you're really ever good for is throwing shade. Knock me down, I'm getting up. I don't care, show no love. But I will always show love. This gift given from above, make me feel like I'm alone. Try to get inside my dome, regardless of the salt you throw. I've never been a Americlone. I've never been a Americlone. I've never been a. You don't have to be what they want you to be. Oh, just be original.